AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
You probably already know that there are currently over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage. If you're a farmer, that gives you over 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support ethanol. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Early gifts are being dispersed to healthcare professionals on the front lines in the form of COVID-19 vaccines. While pharma companies are working to save the world, I'm here just trying to keep batting 1,000 on our elf on the shelf, and Chip is on the hunt for one of Santa's reindeer's very, very distant cousin. It is the most wonderful time of the year.
Live from a glorious Midwestern winter wonderland via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with Machinery Pete Greg Peterson. Then we'll talk with Seth Meyer from Mizzou. Then Ashley Arrington from Agra Authority. And right after the news, Kirk Hins from BAM WX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, filling in for Chip from U.S. Farm Report, the incomparable Tyne Morgan. Good morning, Tyne.
Good morning. Thank you. What a great way to start the week, allowing me to host AgriTalk again, and just filling in for a couple days this week as Chip is doing apparently a very, very important task.
He is. Well, you know, it's important to him, I guess. And so that should make it important to us, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I could care less. But hey, it makes him happy. And he has some R&R. You know, my R&R, my idea of R&R is a beach, not a deer stand, but to each his own.
Yeah. Yeah. I fall sort of somewhere in between those two. I don't really care where it is. A recliner is more where I'm at these days. Mm. You know, a recliner.
Nice.
This time of year, nice hot cup of organic tea, perhaps a cinematic presentation, perhaps even a series of cinematic presentations. And I tell you what, it got just a little bit cozier around here over the weekend. We've got, I don't know, 4, maybe 5-ish inches of snow here in Sparkle City. And Tyne,
no,
I'm telling you, with Christmas coming up, it is absolutely magical around here. It looks like a Christmas card where I live right now.
You know, I convinced James to line the house, our house, with lights. And this is the first time he's ever done it. It was not an easy ask, but I kind of, instilled the competitive. I said, you know, the people that we bought this house from, they decked the halls every year. We cannot let them one up us. And so finally, he made the decision, and a layer of snow. I cannot believe I'm saying this because I'm not a fan of snow, but a layer of snow would make it perfect right now.
And that's the thing.
I'm a bit envious.
You know, the neighborhood here looked pretty nice, because everybody has their lights out and stuff, myself included. But then you add that element of snow, and it really sets it off, baby. Really. We're Christmased up over here.
Well, our elf on the shelf made snowflakes this morning and put them all over the windows.
Oh,
so
very good.
That's our form of, that's Missouri snow apparently right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
What's going on in the news, Davis? I know a lot of things going on to kick off this week. I mean, we're less than 2 weeks away from Christmas.
It's coming right up, and a two-phased COVID aid package is the latest revised bipartisan proposal expected to roll out today. That $908 billion proposal we'd been talking about will be split into two pieces, a less controversial portion, which includes funding for the Paycheck Protection Program, unemployment benefits, vaccine distribution, schools, and testing, and then also a separate bill for state and local governments that includes a liability shield, and those state and local government funds and liability shield are what's holding up the greater package. And so I guess we chop that leg off and deal with it down the road.
I guess wait and see. Kick the can down the road. That's typically the headline, right? We're gonna have to deal with
bipartisan. A bipartisan group of House lawmakers urged the Trump administration to extend exemptions to tariffs on China beyond the end of the year, when they are set to expire. In September, the White House said it would extend Section 301 tariff exemptions on a variety of goods, including medical masks and certain electronic products, until the end of the year. The lawmakers wrote, quote, "We should certainly examine our reliance on China. However, reducing tariffs is still necessary to maximize our supply of PPE, that's personal protective equipment, and other supplies, while companies build production capacity in the United States and reshore supply chains." So, willing to look at maybe too much reliance on China here, but not quite ready to totally shut that door. Tyne?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, it'll be interesting to see with a new administration what kind of their strategy is with China. Are we going to see this balance? Are we going to see kind of a hard line? You know, we saw what the past 4 years did. It'll be interesting to see exactly how that plays out over the next 4 years as well.
Well, interesting you'd bring that up. In her introductory speech on Friday, Joe Biden's U.S. Trade Representative nominee Katherine Tai said her team would aim to make trade a force for good. Tai helped negotiate a deal that would become a foundation for such a policy when she led talks on the USMCA as the head trade lawyer for House Ways and Means. Now, Tai used to head China enforcement at the U.S. Trade Rep's office, and observers expect her to take a hard line on the Beijing government. And I think that some were fearful that a Biden administration might be soft on China, but, you know, Tai's nomination here, she's a hardliner on Beijing.
Yeah, and when it comes to USMCA, you mentioned that. I talked to the dairy industry last week, and they called her a student of trade, and that she knows, you know, our relations with Mexico and Canada, and they believe that, you know, taking the first step in getting Canada to actually enforce USMCA, that she's going to do that. But she's fluent in Mandarin. There's a lot of signs that point to maybe there's a reason that she was Biden's or is Biden's pick.
I wonder if that would move things along more quickly then, because as I recall, when we were negotiating the phase one deal, there was a lot of time spent on translation and, you know, sort of digging into the minutiae of the verbiage of the text. Anyway, Biden is considering naming Gina McCarthy, former head of the EPA, as climate czar to oversee climate policies across federal agencies. Now, Biden did formally select former Secretary of State John Kerry, but that's as a global climate czar, making him part of the U.S. national security team, coordinating with other countries on the environment. And doses of the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine are headed toward 145 health departments and hospitals around the U.S., and some high-risk groups could start getting inoculated as soon as today. Tyne.
Thanks so much, Davis. We appreciate it. All right, let's head over to Kirk of BAMWX. And Kirk, a lot of talk this morning on social media about looking at South American weather. And, you know, when you look at the rainfall, are areas in South America that are high production areas, are they seeing the needed rainfall to help with production?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. I'm hoping you guys are doing well as well. And we did see some pretty widespread, I would say moderate rainfall across areas like Mato Grosso, Goiás, areas just south and to the east, which are some of the major soybean areas. So I would say 1 to 3 inches widespread, good 70% coverage in those areas. So I would say in the short term, yes, those areas did see some rainfall relief this weekend.
Okay, so as we move then, Kirk, over the next, you know, month or so, what areas are going to need more rain? I mean, do we have some that are seeing a major deficit right now that you're saying, okay, this isn't enough?
Yeah, I would definitely say less so central Brazil, more so southern Brazil, Uruguay, and into especially central Argentina. If there's one area, I would say, especially into central Argentina, that area, I think we have seen a big deficit grow, and we see that grow. You know, I think it could be rather substantial over the next month plus. I would definitely keep close eyes on that area especially.
Kirk, how much is La Nina playing into what South America is seeing right now? Is this typical of a La Nina pattern?
Yeah, it's 100%. I would say maybe even more. It is a classic, strong La Nina pattern. It reminds me a lot of 2017-2018 pattern. It's a very similar style of La Nina. So I would say it's almost 100%. Responsible for this pattern down here. And last year was El Nino, and it was widespread rain. So you could think of the drier, the normal conditions is a direct representation of La Nina for sure.
Kirk, real quick, how many of our listeners are going to see a white Christmas?
It depends on where they are. I would say, especially across the Ohio Valley, point to the east, I'd say that's looking pretty good.
Kirk, thank you so much. Have a very Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right.
Appreciate it, guys.
Well, it seems like a lot of farmers right now are searching for Christmas gifts at auctions. We'll check in with Machinery Pete next.
Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. But exports are unreliable and have been flat for 30 years. So how do we utilize all that corn while ensuring dependable markets right here at home? POET is working hard to increase the amount of ethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%.
Nationwide, adoption of E15 would generate almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year, which is the equivalent of nearly doubling corn exports by increasing domestic markets that can't be taken away. That's 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support higher blends of ethanol. It's time for farmers to unite around E15. Biofuels like ethanol are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture will change the world. Learn more about what you can do to support Nationwide E15 at poet.com/ag.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize the Pork Checkoff for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Harold, what am I going to do with the chisel plow? I told you I wanted a fuzzy sweater for Christmas.
Davis, I'm pretty sure those exact conversations are going on right now because the auction world has been hot. And before we check in with Machine Repeat about that, we have this industry spotlight.
It's been a race to the finish for harvest. Winter is on its way, and it takes some extra precaution to keep equipment up and running in the cold. We're talking with Chad Christensen, a premium diesel expert from Senex, the energy brand of CHS. Chad, it's time to do a checkup on that fuel supply, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we need to be real mindful of our fuel right now with harvest wrapping up across the country and temperatures dropping. And there's still a lot of work to do on the farm. So, you know, your equipment only runs as well as the fuel inside of it. And so it's whether you're feeding livestock or wrapping up some fall field work or even just clearing snow. You know, winter has some of the most demanding conditions on fuel equipment.
Right. And what are some of the things, some of the issues that can come up in a fuel system?
There's a host of issues that we commonly see when Mother Nature leaves that door open and the temperatures start to drop. Equipment just won't start. That fuel filter blocking due to the gelling is what we're seeing. Otherwise, it's water has settled in the bottom of that filter, choking off that fuel to your system. And so ahead of these really cold temperatures, I think it's important to understand your fuel's cold weather characteristics all the way from your cloud point to the CFPP of that fuel.
All right. So what do we do as equipment owners to prevent those issues?
Implementing regular tank maintenance program to help eliminate some of that water and contaminants ahead of the winter season. And then couple that with switching to a winterized premium diesel fuel like Senex Wintermaster. This will drastically reduce any of those issues that we're seeing associated with colder temperatures. Wintermaster is built for the extreme cold. It's a Senex premium diesel fuel, and it's got blended in with a number one premium diesel fuel. And then it's injected with most of the complete additive package on the market.
Yeah, very good. Okay, where do we go for more information, Chad?
You know, you can talk to your Senex Premium Diesel dealer or visit us at Senex.com.
Excellent. Good work, Chad. That's Chad Christensen, a premium diesel expert from Senex.
All right, welcome back. We have Machinery Pete gracing us with his presence on this Monday. Greg, from what I understand, it is the most wonderful time of year when it comes to auctions right now.
Oh, man, it's a very busy time, and if you're selling good condition used equipment, it definitely will be a Merry Christmas. The market is very, very hot right now.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Typically this time of year, do we see an influx of auctions around the country?
Yeah, you know, kind of middle of November, right up till Christmas, there always is a little spike in the number of sales year-end, and this year, thankfully, a little more orderly harvest. We were done a little earlier. And what's happening now, Ty, the market was already strong. And then, of course, commodity prices have started to move in the right direction. So what's happened is it's begun to awaken a powerful force from a number of years ago, the year-end buyer for equipment to help minimize taxes. I mean, you address what you need for the coming year with the added benefit of, oh, hey, I can write this off in different fashion through Section 179, which was beefed up by President Trump a couple years ago. And there just hasn't really been the money come year end the last few years. It's been difficult. And now it's just been amazing here, November and December of 2020.
So, Greg, is it all across the board? Or are you looking at combines, a certain type of four-wheel drive tractors? I mean, really, what is it that you're saying? This is the hottest thing in the market right now where prices are just record-breaking.
It's pretty much everything, Ty. And again, contingent on condition. So if we take the combine market, for example, last Thursday I was down in Central Illinois. It was an online auction by my good friend Mike Mosky, retirement sale for Brian Rage, Brian and his wife Nancy. Now, they had a combine that was a little bit of a market tester for me because it was a two-year-old Massey Ferguson, which is a great machine, but you just don't see as many of them. So it was a model 9545 with 427 SEP hours on it, 18 model, and it sold hard cash for $234,000, which I look, the average dealer asking price right now is $245. So you're talking about $10,000 off a retail price. And that's kind of what I'm seeing, whether it's the 1 to 3 year old stuff under warranty like that one, mm-hmm. or if it's out 10 plus years old. I think that same day, last Thursday, in Michigan, our friends at Sheridan Auction had a 96 model Case Edge 2188. So now you're talking, what, 24-year-old combine? Super sharp, 2,600 and some hours. That brought 57.2, second highest auction price in over 7 years on that model. So this is just what I'm seeing daily all over the place.
Yeah, so when you look at this week, more auctions coming up this week. You know, if I was looking right now, what are a couple that are you were saying these could be auction highlights of the week?
Yeah, there's really three. Well, there's a ton of them, Tyne, but there's three I'm really watching. One is Wednesday in Virginia, actually Southeast Virginia, just south of Richmond. Our good friends at Rich and Rich Auctioneers have a sale, a retirement sale for Willie Besco Jr. Beautiful John Deere equipment on this sale, including a 17 John Deere S670 combine, only 392 SEP hours on it, 8360R with 620 hours. It's got a John Deere 7520 with a loader of 1,362 hours, just super sharp. So again, that's in Virginia. We're watching that one on Wednesday. Tomorrow, our good friends at Sullivan Auctioneers are having a sale for Olson Custom Farms. Fantastic custom harvest operation out of Hendricks, Minnesota. Chad Olson, they just do an awesome job. But I tell you what, they have 8 2018 John Deere S780s and 6 18 model S770s. So folks, go to Sullivan Auctioneers, check that out. Now, these sell all absolute, no buyer's fee. You talk about, you know, seeing where the market's at. And these are nice machines, good low hours on them. They're not going out of business. They're just, they didn't trade them in this year to the dealer. They're just selling them outright. So really great opportunity there. And then Thursday, our friends at the Steffes Group have their big sale in Litchfield, Minnesota, online auction. And there's a tractor on that on this sale time, a 2007 John Deere 7830 with 514 hours on it. It has really got people buzzing. So every day this week, tons of great sales all over the place. So, just check our blog, folks. We'll try to keep you up to snuff on it.
Yeah, Greg, there was an auction not too far from us, 20 miles down the road or so. And, I mean, it was the talk of the town, right? It was the mm-hmm. event of the year, apparently, socially distanced event of the year, outdoors yep. last week. And the talk was there were a couple of really nice pieces of equipment and quite a few people were there from out of state. Are we still seeing some folks travel hundreds of miles just to find the right equipment right now? Or are we seeing less of that because of COVID-19?
Oh, you know, it's still happening, Tyne, for sure. I think the market is so active right now. Of course, the online is revolutionized things, and people are so much more comfortable just sitting at home and clicking. But I do think that the physicalness of an auction, because we haven't been able to get out to many, the states that are able to have them, and if you have a nice sale, there's kind of this pent up, I don't know how to describe it, but I mean, it's hard to get together with people, you know, churches are shut down, it's not much happening, and then, ooh, here's a nice auction. And people, you know, being safe, you know, like you said, socially distanced, put your mask on, whatever. But getting out and just a chance to kind of, hey, Fred, how are you doing? And compare notes. And of course, now with commodity prices being higher, there's optimism. So yeah, it's year end, it's I'm not surprised that sale local to you there was generating quite a buzz.
You know, when you look back at 2020, what a roller coaster ride we've been on. You know, optimism at the start of the year, and then when COVID-19 hit, commodity prices dropped, really kind of some bleak outlooks, and then we were able to recover, including this unprecedented price rally this fall. As far as used equipment go, what's been the biggest surprise for you in 2020, Greg?
Just the whole online play tying. I would tell people that really, you know, when March hit, I was frankly really worried and pessimistic. It's like, wow, things are just going to curl up here and people won't sell. And, you know, the used pipeline will get jammed up. And just the exact opposite happened. And in fact, I think we've had about 7 to 10 years of innovation with online buying and selling crunched into 9 months. So going forward, I'm actually very excited for the whole space, manufacturers, dealers, auctioneers, private sellers. I will be able to better utilize online to sell that piece in Virginia to a buyer in Nebraska and have it move efficiently and just take off and not look back. That's 2020 to me in a nutshell.
Yeah, were the ones that were already online, already doing online auctions, that type of thing, do you think they were that much ahead, or have we seen just everyone jump into this space and play catch up?
They were that much ahead, and the amazing thing with technology now, so many new auction companies, just a guy popping up, and you can utilize these online tools and get the machinery out to everybody. So the thing is changing right underneath us in a powerful way, good for both buyers and sellers.
Well, Machinery Pete, if I don't talk to you, have a very Merry Christmas.
Yeah, you as well.
Thanks, Greg. I appreciate it. All right, we need to take a quick break. But what is going on with the markets to start off this week? Are we seeing a bang, and what's driving it? We'll check in with Pro Farmer. That is next.
There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. Moving from 10 to 15% ethanol nationwide would result in almost 2 billion bushels of new domestic corn demand each year. That means nearly eliminating the need for corn exports by ensuring dependable markets right here at home while driving commodity prices to profitable levels. Biofuels are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Our expert on this Monday is Jeff Wilson. Good morning, Jeff. What in the world is going on with wheat?
Good morning, Ty. It's really the story that last week it got a little ahead of itself. It had over a 6% rally, and the market was trading on rumors that Russia would instill a export tax on its wheat exports. They did it today, so it's buy the rumor last week, sell it this week. And not to mention the fact that their prices started to come down last week domestically. So that was another signal that maybe all of the news about lower prices in and less exports out of Russia were getting factored into the marketplace.
Well, we saw corn on the positive side, but now it looks like we're turning more mixed. What kind of bearish news may be anchoring the market at this point?
I think the bearish news in both corn and beans, because they both took off overnight, and then they've the corn has paired its gains here at mid-session, and beans have also done that. The story is we've had enough rain in parts of Brazil and Argentina over the course of the last week that it buys time for the crop. It doesn't necessarily boost anything, but it buys it, keeps it alive, and now we're just going to see what happens with rain the next few weeks. It's also the end of the year, and people just don't want to take a lot of new positions because we know that the weather can change, and why take a position if you've already had a good year?
Right. And real quick, what's headlining livestock on this Monday?
Just the idea that we got the vaccines going out, and maybe that's going to be a positive coming forward in terms of pulling beef and pork demand ahead. And we're also due for cyclical and seasonal lows in both cattle and hogs.
Jeff, we really appreciate it. You can check out more commentary from Pro Farmer at profarmer.com. When we come back, we'll explore ethanol with Seth Meyer of the University of Missouri. We'll do that on AgriTalk next.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by Bayer. For a strong start, trust the tried and true protection of Corvus and Harness Extra herbicides from Bayer.
You know, Tyne.
Yes.
A little AgriTalk trivia for you. Chip and I both have Hansen blood in our genetic makeup. These guys never show up for Christmas, but yeah.
Both of you? So are you and Chip related?
No, not at all. Not even close. But there are Hansons in our respective lineages. Little Agri trivia for you.
Are you pulling my leg right now?
No, seriously. It's absolutely true.
I thought you were playing Hanson Brothers because our next guest kind of looks like him, but no?
I don't know that I've ever seen our next guest in person. I don't know if I could form an opinion.
Just take my word for it. Seth Meyer of the University of Missouri. Seth, how are you doing on this Monday?
Doing very good. I'm not sure there's a resemblance either, but you all can go Google that and find out.
Googling now.
Everybody's Googling. It's going to be one of the top search items on this Monday. Does Seth Meyer look like the Hanson brothers? Anyway, Seth, you know, when we look at, let's start off with ethanol. I mean, I want to talk about broader scope of the ag economy right now as we head into 2021. We had some recent adjustments from USDA. But when you look at ethanol right now, I mean, you've been pretty clear that it, you know, we're not going to make up for the lost demand, yet we're still waiting on EPA to release some very important numbers, right?
No, we are. EPA was supposed to release this. You know, they released the preliminary normally way back in May or June. We didn't get it. They have to release the final by November 30th. They missed that deadline. It looks like we may be past the first of the year, and there's a question whether this administration puts it out or the subsequent folks put it out. So there's a lot of uncertainty.
There is a lot of uncertainty. And so let's say we don't see this administration put out the RFS numbers. What do you think that means then for the next administration? If we look at history, you know, has presumed President-elect Joe Biden been favorable of ethanol? Do you think this is a good thing? And with Vilsack returning, what does that mean?
Yeah, I think that if you see some favorable disposition towards ethanol, I think the problem next year is, though, the EPA can't come in when the year's already started and make a dramatic return to something which results in a higher blend rate, right? I think it is difficult for them to put out a rule with a big increase when we're already in the middle of the year where the compliance is supposed to occur. I think it's also going to be an unpopular decision across some constituency, no matter what happens. But I think you might see a bit more supportive ethanol policy, perhaps. At least the market thinks so, with RIN prices having risen significantly.
Okay. So as we see this morning, we see vaccines being distributed to those frontline healthcare workers. As we see maybe a light at the end of this COVID-19 tunnel, possibly. What do you think that means for ethanol demand recovery in 2021?
Well, I think it is a positive if we see vaccinations and folks drive more, because the biggest indicator of how much corn ethanol we're going to produce at this moment is really, the big factor is really, are folks going to drive or not? The percent inclusion rate isn't going to be the big driver. It is if folks drive or not. So I think, you know, as we look forward, if we have vaccine and folks return to work, that's where you'll see it. At the same time, we talk about these credits. There's a huge overhang in credits here. So I don't think folks should expect, even if we get a supportive policy, that we'll see a huge change in the grind for ethanol unless folks drive more.
Let's be realistic, Seth. How long do you think it takes for gasoline demand and ethanol consumption to get back to pre-COVID-19 levels? Or do you think we don't achieve that?
You know, I think you're going to continue to see lower levels in 2021. I think there's a chance to start getting there in 2022 as you see a recovery. But I don't know how much of what we're observing is permanent, right? How many businesses have decided that folks can work at home? At the same time, people don't want to take buses to work. Do they drive or find some other way to get to work? So I'm a little bit concerned about the longer run implications of motor fuel consumption, and then add to that electric car development. And I think the longer run is rather tenuous.
So did COVID-19 rewrite the future of ethanol, do you think?
You know, to some extent, I think it was, we talk about these short run effects having like small refinery exemptions. And I'll say it doesn't matter so much this year. What it matters is it creates uncertainty over several years. So I think somewhat the trajectory of ethanol has been written by the last several years of uncertainty with small refinery exemptions. And then now I think we've got COVID and potential changes in how folks approach going to work. And I think that really does have the potential to cut some demand in the medium term, and then electric cars are going to make a challenge.
So then what factors do you think will drive the long-term trends for ethanol? I mean, you mentioned the new administration favorable towards ethanol, but at the same time, we know that Vice President Kamala Harris has not been very favorable when it comes to oil, when it comes to gasoline. So what do you think happens in the future that will really drive these long-term trends?
You know, so I think if folks want to look for what are the possibilities for additional ethanol grinds, you got to look overseas. You got to look for exports. To me, could be the more dynamic market that can support these ethanol facilities in the long run. I mean, and we have some trouble. You know, Reuters is reporting this morning that on Monday the tariff-free access to Brazil is going away. And do we have negotiations with them that'll solve this? Are oil prices going to remain cheap as we struggle to have a global economic recovery from COVID? But I think there is an opportunity as well, too, in the export market to be more dynamic in terms of gaining access and improving the corn grind for ethanol.
Okay, so farmers that are listening, as we look at 2021, I mean, ethanol was such a driving factor of the corn market this spring. It seems like that's taken kind of a backseat. But what data should farmers watch to gain insights about the ethanol market, Seth?
So, again, I think you're going to want to watch kind of what the longer-term prospects, so kind of what's the longer-term aspect picture given from this administration. Does the RVO get punted to the next administration? And do you see both the one-year RVO, and then there's this reset rule, and for a lack of a better way to put it, it's the long-run philosophy of ethanol mandates in the United States that the EPA was supposed to release, but also didn't release on time, and that's sitting out there, and that will kind of give you a picture for the next several years that this administration views for domestic ethanol. And then watch oil prices. If oil prices start to rise, we'll do better in the export market as well.
Well, exploring the net farm income picture, Seth, I know FAPRI has done some extensive research and looked at the data, and projections this fall and late summer were that we would see CFAP, MFP, all of these ad hoc government payments, that it would make up 40% of the net farm income picture for 2020. Well, as USDA released those new numbers, did those ad hoc government payments take up that chunk or that big of a chunk of net farm income for 2020?
Well, so for our own estimates, the share of government payments didn't really change much because we didn't have CFAP 2 in there, right? So our last estimates done in August, and that's about the time that CFAP 2 came out. So we added probably on the order of $13 billion of additional government payments from that program. And then you also added a chunk from improved, essentially, corn and soybean prices from that part forward. So government payments are going to continue to make up a big chunk of 2020 farm income.
So then as we look at better commodity prices, I mean, I know it's not rosy everywhere. And if your marketing plan was kind of, you know, strict and didn't allow you to take advantage of the rally this fall, you're in worse shape than others. But when you look at improved prices, even with the dramatic increase that we've seen in commodity prices this fall, if those can continue into 2021, do you think those will be high enough to offset the possible lower or no ad hoc government payments that we may see in 2021?
Honestly, no. We could have a really strange situation where we have sharply higher cash receipts for crops, sharply higher cash receipts for livestock, and yet sharply lower farm income. We're talking about something where direct government payments going from around $46 billion in 2020 down to something that's about $10 billion-ish in 2021, and cash receipt increases aren't going to offset that. So again, we're talking about something where you could have a sharp decline in farm income at the same time receipts for crops and livestock look much better.
Yeah, and Seth, we don't know what's going to happen in 2021. We know that Tom Vilsack did not have CCC at his disposal during his 8 years that he served under the Obama administration. You know, why have things changed that he possibly can use CCC if needed now?
Right. So there was a policy change there, and there is some history to that. If you go back in time as to why he was limited and some folks thinking that CCC was being targeted at a state level. So there's a policy behind that, right? So when you jump forward and you say, how can those CCC funds continue to be used in terms of a new program? I think we can envision that the program isn't going to look like CFAP 1 or CFAP 2. Because with the price changes we've seen, if you apply the same type of formula, you'd almost get nothing, right? Because prices are at or above where they started the year. So you envision that maybe this program looks different,
right?
And you twist CCC funds in some other way to try and address an issue in a way that both helps farmers and appeals to this administration.
Seth Meyer, thank you so much. Have a very Merry Christmas.
You too.
Well, Seth set the stage perfectly. We're going to get into the banking side of things when we come back on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by new Dalaro Complete Fungicide. Dalaro Complete, 3 modes of action for consistent disease control. It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Davis.
Davis.
We haven't had enough Southern flair on this Monday, and so we're going to fix that.
Okay. Okay.
And what better way to do that than to bring in the Ashley Arrington of Agra Authority. It doesn't get much more Southern than that. Ashley, how are you doing? Less than 2 weeks away from Christmas.
Oh, I'm doing great. Christmas is my favorite time of year. And yeah, here's your little dose of Southern. If there's a translator needed, Ty, maybe you can help everybody out. But let's hope I'm not too Southern that folks don't understand me today.
What is your favorite Christmas tradition? I mean, I know you love some Reese's Christmas trees, right? But what's your favorite Christmas tradition?
Baking. I made 4 different kinds of candies this past weekend. Crock pot candy, cornflake, just all the different little Southern candies that you can make. I just love to bake, and I give that as gifts to a lot of people, because if I'm going to eat and get fat, everybody needs to eat and get fat.
Well, Ashley, Davis here. If I can jump in, I need your help then, because I was going to make the peanut butter drop cookies with the Hershey's Kiss in them, and I bought the Hershey's Kisses, but I ate the entire bag before I actually had a chance to make the cookies themselves, and now I'm finding myself just eating the raw cookie dough out of the fridge. Can you help me? What's your advice on something like that?
Man, it's Christmas time. YOLO. Just have at it.
Thank you.
Doing what you need to do, man.
I knew I was doing the right thing. Thank you, Ashley.
Oh, Ashley, we talked with machinery. Yeah, you're his fix. That's just what he needed. He needed the encouragement to go ahead and continue to go down that path. Ashley, Machinery Pete was on with us earlier, and he was talking about just how busy it is right now with auctions. Just year-end buying has been off the charts. I mean, as you were talking to some of your ag lending customers and clients and farmers or ranchers, I mean, how many right now are really focused on what do I do as far as year-end tax planning goes, and what are some big decisions I need to make?
Yes, for sure. And I wish more people would get the mindset before year end, because in banking, everybody tries to rush in at the beginning of the year. All farmers will show up when their line of credit comes through. Not all. I shouldn't say that. Put them in the same box, but a good many. But it's always good to come in earlier and start now. Just update. You can go ahead and do a few things to your balance sheet. Yeah, there's going to be a few more things take place before year end. But take a look at your current assets, current liabilities. You'll have to do those later. But you can go ahead and take a look at your intermediate and long-term. Have you sold land, equipment values like Machinery P? If they've changed, have you sold, bought equipment? Go ahead and get things updated now that you know we're not going to change anymore before the beginning of the year, so that when it gets to the beginning of the year and it's time to go in and sit down with your banker, you have the majority of your information ready.
Yeah, and you know, Paul Niefer, farm CPA, I was talking to him a couple weeks ago, and he said, listen, I am busier right now with year-end tax planning with farmers than I typically am on April 15th. And he said, you know, there are things you need to be thinking about, including possibly prepaying some items and prepaying some things. Is that wise right now, Ashley, from an ag lender standpoint?
Yes, and it's always good to get in with your accountant sooner rather than later. You're welcome, Paul, for me saying that for you. But get in sooner than later, because if you show up 12/31 and your accountant says, hey, you're going to have this huge tax liability, you know, you need to spend some money. Well, you only have a couple hours left to do it. So the sooner you get in with it, the better. But also, if you see that, you know, some people did have a really good 2020 because the price is getting better and, you know, not having as bad of weather or having more favorable weather in their areas. So if you can see that tax liability looming in the future and you can go and do some pre-buying to help all said that, that's definitely a conversation you need to have with your accountant, but also, you know, bring your banker in the loop on that. So if you need an early advance off your operating line or some funding to get that done, just have everybody on your team in the loop on what's going on there to help save yourself some money, but also get ready for 2021 and your renewal with your banker at the same time.
So what are some things that you think that farmers and ranchers should be either asking their ag lender right now or talking to their ag lender about that maybe they haven't thought about in the past couple of weeks?
Really just getting ready for 2021. And what I've been telling a lot of my people to do is, you know, 2020 just started out as a crap year. I'm sorry. I don't know if you can say crap on the radio.
You can. No, you can. Totally good. No radio edit needed. No radio edit needed. Go on.
Okay, good deal. But, you know, as we're getting to now, things have gotten better, especially, you know, in terms of pricing and things. We're able to take advantage of some opportunities. So if you had a problem, it's a good time to sit down with your banker and be like, okay, I think I had a problem this year. This is what I think happened. But then have a fresh set of eyes and say, okay, well, that did happen. But what about these other smaller things that we may not be addressing, and drill down a little bit more so you can start 2021 on the best foot that you can. But likewise, if you're more profitable this year, what played into that? What did you do right? Because that's just important to know. Instead of fixing a problem, if you have a problem, it's also good to know and sit down with your banker and say, hey, I had a good year in 2020. This is what I'm thinking about doing with my profits. I'm thinking about paying down debt. Have that conversation with them. You know, what do you recommend that I do with these profits? And then also, you know, this is what I know I did right, and I'm going to continue to implement that in the future.
Yeah, it has been an unprecedented year in many ways. Is that forcing some unprecedented changes when it comes to conversations you're having with some of your clientele?
Yes. I mean, some people have, you know, that it was kind of a bad year leading up until we had, you know, the pricing opportunities that we were taking advantage of. But for some people, the pricing opportunities still were not enough, because 2019 was a really bad year in terms of weather everywhere. There was a lot of devastation in terms of crops. And even with better prices coming into where we are now in 2020, it just still wasn't enough to fill that hole. And a lot of people were really counting on 2020 to be that year to make up the shortfall of 2019. So if that's not the case, it is time to have some hard conversations of, you know, how much of a hole do we have left to dig out of? Is it a possibility? Do we want to keep digging the hole deeper? Is it time to cut ties? What do we need to do here? And those are conversations to also go ahead and have with your CPA and your banker before you start 2021.
Ashley, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Davis and I are going to send you our addresses, because that weekend baking sounds amazing.
Yes, send them my way. I will shoot y'all all the southern treats.
From banking to baking, Ashley Arrington joined us on this Monday. Thank you so much. All right, Davis, this afternoon, we have Tommy Grassafi. We have Brian
Splett.
Be
awesome.
It's going to be so much fun this afternoon, and apparently you're letting me stick around.
Well, we're so glad to have you. I mean, it's a privilege, is what it is, Ty. You're incomparable.
Let me roll up my pants, because it's getting deep in here on this Monday. But we do have a lot going on this afternoon. Davis, thank you so much for tag teaming this Monday edition of Agri Talk. Listen, catch us this afternoon.